Well, aren't you glad this morning that the mercy of God is more? I love that hymn that we sang, and I think it's so fitting that we would sing it from time to time as we've been making our way through this wonderful little book of Jonah. Because as we have discovered, making our way through Jonah, the book of Jonah is 48 verses filled with the relentless, scandalous mercy of God. You see, as you go through the book, God's relentless grace, and you taste that scandalous mercy, and by the time you get to the end of the book, you discover that God is sovereign over his mercy, that he is going to extend that mercy to whomever he wants to extend it, whenever and however he does it. And sometimes when that mercy is directed our way, it is a great cause for thanksgiving. It is a great cause for celebration. And if you've ever needed mercy, if you've ever found yourself where you've come before the Lord and you know that he knows and you're in agreement that what he knows merits judgment and you get mercy, it's a stunning thing, isn't it? Our hearts just are immediately filled with gratitude to God. We thank God profusely. God, thank you so much for your mercy. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for your kindness. Thank you for your relentless pursuit of my heart. And our hearts really do overflow with the immensity of the mercy that we have tasted. And I suspect there's not a one of us in this room who have not found ourselves there. There's not a one of us singing a hymn like we just sung that our hearts don't in some way or another find ourselves filled with thanksgiving to the Lord for his mercy. So how do you explain what's going on in Jonah's heart? Because when we find Jonah in chapter 4, he is not celebrating mercy at all. In fact, the mercy that he has observed in chapter 3 has become so offensive to him that he has been scandalized toward God. And so how do we go about understanding what is happening in the book of Jonah? We've discovered already that God intends to do a work through us. We noted that Jonah is writing the book many, many years after the events of the book took place. And I shared that with you at the very beginning of our series. That's my opinion as to how we got the book of Jonah. And obviously, you're not obligated to my opinion, and there are other options out there, but that one is the one that makes the most sense to me. That Jonah is looking back on this period in his life, and there are things, profound things, that God taught him about himself, about the work of God, about the will of God, about the heart of God. And now Jonah has put together this book very artfully, very skillfully. We've noted the beauty of the book. We've noted how Jonah writes in such a way that almost every paragraph catches our attention. It draws us into the story. And so he's looking back on these events, and it's like Jonah draws us in, and he says, I want you to come near as I tell you my story. Because as I tell you my story, I've put things in the story that you need. I've put things in the story that God had to teach me. And as you observe God teaching me, I want God to be able to teach you. And so if Jonah were standing here, he would say, this is what I intend for the book to do. This is why I wrote the book. I want the book to impact your senses. I want you to be scandalized like I was. I want you to understand why I was on that hill. I want you to understand why I ran from God. It wasn't because I was afraid of the Ninevites. That's not why I ran. There was a much bigger reason. There was a much deeper reason. And I'm going to show you that reason, Jonah says. And the reason that you need to know that reason is because oftentimes that reason is in your heart and it's why you run from God. Jonah says, I want to impact your senses. And then Jonah says, I want to stir your conscience. I've written the story in such a way that you actually have a front row seat on the boat. Then you have a front row seat as I am in the belly of that great fish. You have a front row seat as I land back on the shores of Joppa. You walk with me up to Jerusalem. You stand there while I pay my vows in the temple. And then we journey together to Nineveh, and you get a front row seat to see what's going on there. And you're going to join me in chapter 4 on a hill, and you're going to understand the heart of a prodigal prophet, because it's your heart. And so I wrote the book not just to get your attention and impact your senses, but to stir your conscience and move your heart. Jonah would say to us, you know, as you read my story, don't miss the speeches of God. God is going to ask me three powerful questions. And those questions come at the end of my story. And they were the secret to how God exposed my heart to me. And these are the questions that are going to impact your own heart. They're going to stir your conscience. And Jonah says, and the outcome of all of this is that your will would be conformed to God's. Now that's a very powerful story, isn't it, that we've been reading? Jonah has been surprisingly quiet on the journey. In chapter 1, God gives him this incredible mandate, and we observed that Jonah rose up in obedience to the Lord, or at least that's what we thought, and then immediately he goes 1,500 miles in the other direction to the port city of Joppa, where he boards a ship and then takes a 1,500-mile, or what he thought would be a 1,500-mile journey, to Tarshish, which was the Timbuktu of his day. And all the while, we are reading the story, and Jonah is telling us what's going on in his heart. I'm not talking to God. I don't want to be around God. I am done with this prophet business. I am fleeing from the presence of the Lord. And what we came to understand was Jonah was actually renouncing his place in the covenant nation. And he was going to remove himself as far away as he could from anything that would remind him of the ministry that he had had before the Lord. But God had other plans, didn't he? And God began to relentlessly pursue, out of a heart of grace, this prodigal prophet. And we traced his steps as he went down to Joppa, and then he went down into the ship, and then he went down into the hold of the ship. And God brought about a great tempest on the sea. And the sailors, these pagan sailors, began to frantically pray, because this was a storm, clearly, that they had never experienced before. And these were seasoned sailors. They had much experience on the open sea, way past the Mediterranean. And for them to respond this way would indicate to you that this storm was of no natural origin. And they began to say, now how in the world are we going to find out? And while they're up there frantically praying, the captain goes down below and he wakes up Jonah and he says to Jonah, you need to pray to your God, because maybe your God will have a care for us. By the way, that's exactly what the king of Nineveh said, isn't it, in chapter 3? Maybe, it might be that the Lord would relent of the great disaster that he said he would do to us. And you know the story. Jonah comes up on top of the deck, and as he stands on the deck, somebody gets the bright idea to break out the lots. And the minute those lots came out, Jonah just, you can almost imagine it in his heart. He's like, oh no, the lots. Of all things, because it was the one way in Israel that God permitted, outside of going to the high priest to seek God's direction or to have God reveal something, it was the one way that God permitted his people to discover his will. And Jonah knew the minute the lots came out, the game was up. And sure enough, those lots pointed out that he was the one, he was the reason for the storm. And so the sailors say to him, tell us who you are and tell us what you've done. And in chapter 1, verse 9, you have the first great confession the first theological confession in the book. Jonah says, I am a Hebrew. I fear the Lord. And he uses the word Yahweh there, which is the name that God was known by for his covenant people. I serve Yahweh. And he happens to be, and here's the theological creed, he is the God of heaven who made the sea and dry land. And those men were incredibly interested in dry land at that moment. And here is someone who has a relationship to the God who made that sea, who can get them to dry land. And so immediately they began to beseech this God. And you know the story. We got to the end of the book, or at the end of that chapter, and Jonah is standing on the deck, and he has a choice. He can repent, or he can perish. And he was so frustrated at God for sending him to people that he believed did not merit what God was about to give him, that he chose to perish rather than to repent. And it's like Jonah steps back from all of that, and he kind of looks at us. He says, can you believe I did that? I mean, can you believe? Here I am on the deck. I'm almost embarrassed to write it to you. But here I am on the deck, and instead of repenting, I am so arrogant. I am so filled with spiritual pride and self-justification and self-righteousness. I am so convinced that I am in the right and God is in the wrong that when I had an opportunity to repent, I chose to perish. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been so frustrated with God, so upset at something that God allowed or something that God permitted that you actually got to Jonah's spot? Well, we find Jonah in chapter 2 at the bottom of an ocean, and we have the first great prayer in the book. Jonah prays. And he has decided on the way down that perishing was not such a good option after all. And so, as we noted in the prayer, he began to cry out to God, and God extended to this stubborn prodigal prophet an amazing mercy. He had prepared a fish who came and swallowed Jonah and delivered Jonah. And by the end of chapter 2 in the prayer, Jonah puts an incredible statement out, and he says this, I know this, salvation, deliverance belongs to God.